part three of our discussion of the Govinda prayers of Sri Brahma Samhita. So far we've discussed the initial verse, the Pariasha Sutra, that governs all the other verses. All the other verses are expanding on the meaning of that first verse. We'll see that in the very next verse, the one we'll be discussing just now, 32. And we heard the first three verses, the infinite, unlimited glories of Govinda, specifically his abode, his form, and his pastimes. Very beautiful pastimes. So, along the line of the question that was asked about how do we avoid the Hajjiya spirit of hearing pastimes and imagining things. We're going to hear this next verse is something along those lines. So, and as in the response, you'll hear more carefully. So the next group of verses, there was the first three, and then there's the next four, according to Bhaktisiddhanta. You'll see as we go along. These next four verses are another group. And I'll just say it really simply. These next four verses are a response by Lord Brahma to the doubting person who may wonder, my goodness, how can it be like this? How can the cows be like this, and they can supply anything, and the trees can supply anything, and the land can supply anything, and Krishna's flute can do these different things, and it's just fanciful, imaginative, you know, cute, but not substantial. So, to those who have such doubt, these four verses are then presented. How Krishna can be like he is, why he performs the pastimes he performs and they're not imaginative. How is it so? Like the science of it. Yeah. Not exactly the technology. That's up to Krishna, but the science of it. So now we'll begin, starting with the first of those four verses. And I hope the sound works from the computer, yeah? Translation. Well, that's the wrong button. There we go. Translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality, and thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. So now comes a little preview, and you'll see this next slide again this evening because the four verses are connected together. Here's a summary of the next four verses, a sneak preview of coming attractions. These four verses are giving an understanding why Govinda's form, his abode, and his leelas, using Bhaktisiddhanta's language, they're neither imaginative nor unwholesome. And I'm going to emphasize a particular point. When Bhaktisiddhanta, English is not his first language. Bengali was his first language, and when he used English words, they were very precise. He meant what he said, and he said what he meant. And the words unwholesome, it's important in text 32, and if you pay attention to text 32, then you'll understand why it's important in understanding text 37. Like, you know, that topic that many people get wrong because they think that Krishna's pastime with the gopis are unwholesome. Yes? So, we'll get there, but now please understand the language is important. This unwholesome. The form of Krishna is not unwholesome. That's this first verse. As we see, text 32, the one that we just chanted. Ananda Chinmaya Sad Ujjala Vigrahasya. Ujjala, this word means full of dazzling splendor. That's how he has translated, like Ujjala Rasa is a term, it's an adjective describing Krishna's conjugal pastime. Ujjala, full of dazzling splendor. Or here it's Ujjala Vigraha. But notice that the Sanskrit is the same as our first verse, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, just the sequence is different. The first verse is saying Krishna's Vigraha is full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So here this verse is saying that his form is full of dazzling splendor. So what is his form? His form is fully spiritual. I'll just say, repeat something that was from earlier. What form do you know of that's fully spiritual? Answer. We don't have that experience. We have an experience of forms that come into being. You know, the six things. They're born, they grow, they produce byproducts. They dwindle, they vanish, they're died. Every form that we know of is like that. So what's a form that's not like that? Well, if you're an impersonalist, you will say, there is no form. The Absolute is formless. Or if you're a Buddhist, you'll say, the Absolute is nothingness. Because one with the mind cannot imagine somethingness or a form that's spiritual. It's beyond the mind to imagine. Brahma Samhita wants us to know the form is all spiritual. And when we speak of the form as being all spiritual, it's, as it says in the slide here, not imaginative and free from unwholesomeness. The form, because from the form comes the pastimes that are also free from unwholesomeness. It's like a lawyer building a case, you know, something, and then upon that the next something, upon that the next something. So if we want to understand Krishna's pastimes, we have to understand Krishna. And to understand Krishna, we have to understand that his form is full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss, and it's full of dazzling splendor. And because of that, because his form is absolute, then something very curious. One limb can do the same thing as another limb. We can't do that. So we hear of Krishna doing that, he goes, oh, like the undergrad or the freshman at Washington University said, no, can't be like that. And to that, one can reply, why not? Well, because it can't be like that. That's why it can't be like that. But it's not like we're thinking. We're thinking forms that are limited and unwholesome. But Krishna's form is neither. And then, you know, well, it can't be like that. Well, it can't be like that. It is like that. And because we can't understand that which is beyond our experience, we think when we hear about Krishna's form, or his flute playing, or his pastimes, they're imaginative and unwholesome. Well, we have to replace the material conception with a spiritual conception. But here's a quiz question. How do you replace a material conception with a spiritual conception? Answer. Mantra. Question. How? Answer. Mantra releases the mind from the material conception, and then you can receive the spiritual conception. But actually, the spiritual conception is already there. It's just dormant. And we have this artificial, superimposed material conception that's very limiting and unwholesome. And then we try to enjoy. And we find out it's not working. There's always a problem, or many problems. And then we lament, oh, problem. Why is it like that? Boo-hoo. Because we're attempting to enjoy in a way where there's no enjoyment. It's not there. It's the wrong conception. You just have to hit the reset button and go to the spiritual conception. We can't do it. It's not just, where's the reset button? It's not responding. Because we're holding on to our material conceptions. And then there's the boo-hoo. So become happy instead of sad. Become transcendentally, unlimitedly happy. So, how can Krishna's pastimes be like they are? How can Krishna's form be like it is? Because it's absolute. And because it's absolute, for example, one of the prayers that we sing every morning, at least those that attend deity greeting, or you may do in your home, in our temples all over the world, this verse, we sing it, and now we're doing the mantra upasana process, we're meditating upon the meaning. And therefore, one limb, Krishna can eat with his ears. No. Yes. By the sound of the offering of the dvoti, he can eat with his eyes. No. Yes. Because his body is absolute. One limb is interchangeable with the other limb. He can eat with his big toe. He can also eat with his mouth. One limb is as good as the other limb. No. Yes. Because his body is all spiritual. We'll spend some more time on this verse, but now this is preview of tonight's discussion, and then again tomorrow morning's discussion, these four verses. We're just going to do one just now. The next verse, again, it speaks about his form, but his form is full of contradictions, like we'll hear in detail tomorrow morning, excuse me, this evening. But he's described as Navayovana, which means he's eternally youthful. At the same time, he's the oldest. No. Yes. Because his body is fully spiritual. So, he appears however he wants to appear. And he appears youthful. We never see, at least a proper painting of Krishna, but he's you know, in a wheelchair. With gray hair and hobbling along. Although he gets old. I have to do a little research. We often hear that when Krishna was engaged in the Kurukshetra battle, how old? 125 years, yes? You've heard that number? Well, according to Mahabharata, after the Kurukshetra battle, Gandhari says to Krishna, as I have had to experience the loss of my children, you will experience the loss of your family members in 36 years. So, the math, 36 plus 125. At least that long, Krishna was on the planet. And he was ever youthful. 16. Aditi turned 16. She drove us last night to the program. So, you know, as young as Aditi looks, Krishna looks that young. Even he's 100 and whatever it is. 36 plus 25,
160.
Huh? 161. Looking like 16, although you have 161. Think of somebody that's 161 years old. Do they look like they're 16-year-old? No. Krishna? Yes. How? He's eternally youthful. So, 33, we'll discuss this evening. Contradictions. So people that are doubters, they go, over here it says this and over there it says that, so it's got to be wrong. But they're contradictory. Not only that, this contradiction, that contradiction, that contradiction. So how is it possible? 33 is going to disclose how it's possible. And if you can understand the transcendental nature, you know, the spiritual nature of Krishna's body, and that's possible if you're imbued or endowed with the Ladini Shakti, well, here's some more, then you can understand. And otherwise, you won't be able to understand. Vedeshu Durlabham, Adurlabham, Atmabhaktam. Durlabh means difficult. And put the prefix A in front of it, Adurlabh. It's very easy, not difficult. By devotion, not difficult. By empiric prowess, by your academic acumen, not possible. Devotees only. He got on the door. And then 33 just says it in the negative, that those who are engaged in the process of empiric speculation, jnana, and the mystic yoga process, they can't understand. They cannot penetrate into the realm of bhakti unless they're imbued with bhakti. And then 35 is it's a very important verse in Lord Chaitanya's teachings, or to understand Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's teachings, because it deals with the acronym here is ABVD, or the Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. We'll discuss this in detail, but the difference and non-difference simultaneously of all things with Krishna, which sounds like a contradiction. But if we can understand that principle, that is, that all things emanate from Krishna, and therefore the emanations, in one sense, are not different from Him, because they come from Him. They're part of Him, not different. At the same time, there's difference. That which emanates is not the source of emanation. Oneness and difference. Discussed right in Brahma Samhita. And we'll hear more about it tomorrow morning. So that's a little preview of this set of verses. Third time. Brahma is presenting these verses so that the doubting soul, will assume it's sincere, but you know, doubting soul, like Arjuna, he had some doubts, and he presented the doubts. But Krishna, over here you say this, and over there you say that. And it's contradictory, can you please explain? So without the doubting expression, here's the answer to those doubting expressions that say, how can it be that Krishna's form is like this, his flute playing is like that, and his activities with his pastimes? Come on. How is it possible? So this is the response to that doubt. By understanding these four verses properly, doubts are gone, and then one can enter into the house of bhakti. Devotees permitted. And then comes, when you have that bhakti, then you get some really wonderful realizations. That's the next set of verses. So, if you have your book with you, not this, one of these, or there's some printouts or whatever you have, if you have it, please pull it out, because I'm going to read directly from it, from text 32. And we'll start right at the top of the purport. First paragraph. Please read along, or listen as I read. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's explanation of what I just said. You know, so his special language, you'll be able to understand better now. For want of a taste of things spiritual, a grave doubt arises in the minds of those who are enchained by worldly knowledge. On hearing a narration of the pastimes of Krishna, they think that the truth, or tattva, regarding Krishna is a mental concoction of certain learned scholars created by their imaginative brains out of material drawn from the mundane principles. You know, like a bunch of scholarly devotees got together, got real fired up, and said, hey, let's have some fun, let's create some imaginative stories. Yeah, that's a great idea, and then that's what they did. Some people think maybe it's like that. No, they just got a little hyper and started, you know, going out of control. And they made up these stories about Krishna. With the object of removing this harmful doubt, Brahma, in this, and the three following shlokas, after distinguishing between the two things, namely spirit and matter, in a rational manner, has tried to make one understand the pure nila of Krishna obtained by his unmixed ecstatic trance. That's Brahma's unmixed ecstatic trance. So here's how Krishna's pastimes are the way they are, and then next time we're going to hear about Krishna's pastimes. So, essential in all of this, and you're going to hear more in this session about distinguishing matter from spirit. So now, go down a little bit in that same purport. Same paragraph, starting with the sentence, just as Maya, about halfway down the page. Just as Maya is the perverted reflection of the spiritual potency, the variegatedness created by Maya parentheses, ignorance, is also a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness. So, I'm going to pause for a moment. You've heard the expression, as above, so below. You've heard that before. Or here's the Old Testament Bible message. Man is created in the image of God. So God is first, and we're created in the image of, or humans are in the image of, Krishna. So as above, so below. And below is made of Maya, or the illusory potency, or here it says ignorance. And then the variegatedness here is the reflection of the variegatedness there. So, a mere semblance of the spiritual variegatedness is only noticed in this mundane world. So, like, here's a mirror, here's an apple, here's a reflection of the apple in the mirror. The reflection of the apple in the mirror is not an apple. It's a mere semblance of, there's no apple in the mirror, it looks like. There's no nourishment you can get from eating the reflection of the apple in the mirror. There's nourishment in the apple. There's no substance over here. It's a reflection only. Similarly, this material world, the kingdom of Maya, there's no substance. Therefore, there's no satisfaction on the soul platform. And, you know, people sing songs about it. Can't get no satisfaction. Woo-woo. Because there isn't any. Notwithstanding such semblance, the two are wholly different. They look the same, but they're not. And here's this unwholesome word. The unwholesomeness of matter is its defect, semicolon. But in the spirit, there is variegatedness which is free from any fault or contamination. Now we're just speaking of the form of Krishna or his associates or the gopis or anyone, anything. Krishna's flute or the cows or trees or River Jamuna, free from unwholesomeness or any kind of limitation. Free. There is such a realm. Then, the soul and the body of Krishna are identical. That is, Krishna doesn't have a body and then there's a soul within the body. His soul, we have a difference. There's unwholesomeness. There's the soul within the body, and then there's the body. But for Krishna, there's no distinction. There's no inside and outside. There's no soul within Krishna, or unborn within Krishna, or anything like that. It's Krishna on the inside, Krishna on the outside, Krishna in the middle, and it's Krishna. There's no inside, outside. Whereas the body and the soul of fallen creatures, that's us, by the way, are not so. In the spiritual sphere, there is no such difference as that between body and soul. Not only Krishna, but all the other beings. Between the limbs and their proprietor. Between the attributes and the object possessing them of this world. This is three examples of the non-difference because of the absolute nature of the form of Krishna and all the beings. There's no inside, outside, but one limb is the same as another limb. And the object and the person possessing the object, like, you know, the limb, there's no difference. Here there's difference, there there's no difference. And we need to recognize the distinction between the two realms and the forms, and then in turn the pastimes in that realm. Almost done. But such difference really exists in the case of conditioned souls. Interesting sentence. Limbed though Krishna is, his every limb is the whole entity. Got it? Krishna's toe is Krishna. Wait a minute. Krishna's toe is Krishna's toe. It's a different paradigm. It's a spiritual paradigm. We're being shared the spiritual conception of spiritual reality. We can't use the yardsticks of material to understand the spiritual. He performs all varieties of divine spiritual functions with every one of his limbs. Hence, he is an indivisible whole and a perfect transcendental entity. So that's Bhaktisiddhanta's language to help us understand the message of text 32. And again, making emphasis on this Ananda Chinmaya Sud, that the T becomes a D based on the next word. Ananda Chinmaya Sud. So he says the sequence is different, but it's Satchit Ananda. Oh, the eternal knowledge and bliss. That's his form. It's not, he has a form. And so this verse 32 is expanding the meaning of the first verse, the second line of the first verse. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. And here it said that Ananda Chinmaya Sud. Ujvala Vigrahasya, splendorous pastime. And purposely I'm repeating so that you'll pay attention to it. Some Prabhupada said repetition is sometimes necessary for clear understanding. So please forgive me for repeating. This word unwholesome is a very important word in Bhaktisiddhanta's language. His form, his spiritual form, is free from unwholesomeness and any kind of worldly limitation. Brahma wants us to understand that. And therefore, one limb can do anything any other limb can do because that limb is the same as him. There's not a limb and him. As for us, we have a body and then there's the possessor of the body. There's no distinction like that with Krishna. This is a very beautiful painting of Rukmini. And in the pastime from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 60, like us, chapter 60 of Canto 10, like us, Rukmini heard about Krishna. We've all heard about Krishna. But Rukmini, when she heard about Krishna, it was all over. She wasn't interested in anything other than Krishna. So, unfortunately, her brother had a different idea. Ladies, sometimes you have family members that have a different idea than, you know, how you'd like to lead your life and what to do. And her brother wanted her to marry the unthinkable Shishupal. No way was Rukmini going to marry Shishupal. So she wrote a letter to Krishna asking Krishna, please rescue me from this situation. Come kidnap me, and here's how you can do it. Here's the plan. Here's the map. Here's the GPS. Let's go. So in the beginning part of the letter, here's the translation from Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60. Rukmini wrote, a man within this material world is just a dead body. She's going to distinguish a man in this material world from Krishna. Was not. In fact, superficially, the living entity is covered by this body, which is nothing but a bag of skin decorated with beards and mustaches and hairs on the body, and nails on the fingers and hairs on his head. Within this decorated bag, not very complimentary, there are bunches of muscles, bundles of bones, amid pools of blood, always mixed up with stool, urine, mucus, bile, and polluted air, and enjoyed by different kinds of insects and germs. A foolish woman accepts such a dead body as her husband, and in sheer misunderstanding loves him as her dear companion. This is only possible because such a woman has never tasted the ever blissful flavor of your lotus feet. Krishna doesn't have a material form certified by Rukmini. In fact, there's another very nice reference when Rani Kashipu was seeking immortality from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma said, I can't give you immortality because I myself am not immortal. I can't give you something I don't have. So then he very cleverly tried to, like, you know, like people do. He tried to, well, if you can't give me immortality, then let me figure out how it's the next best thing. So one of the things that he asked for, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, was, please let me not be killed by anything living or dead. So, the commentary explains that Krishna's body is not dead, but it's not living like people are living. So, Brahma said, sure, you can't be killed by anything living or dead. A form that's all spiritual is neither dead nor living like we think of something living. Here is Jiva Goswami explaining the same thing. This is like bifurcating the material and spiritual conception of us and Krishna. It's very beautifully written, so listen carefully. It's from Bhagavad Sandarbha, where he's explaining Krishna's position as Bhagavan, and he's making reference to the first verse of Bhagavatam, and specifically the word swara within the first verse of the Bhagavatam. I'm going to read and then comment. The material external senses of the conditioned soul are different from the conditioned souls themselves. Just as the doer is different from the activities he performs. Or, in one sense, a fire is different from the activity of burning. Nice. Not only, you know, the first part is nice, but such a nice explanation to help understand the first one. The doer and the activities of the doer, so that the soul and the body, the body's activities, they're different. Fire and the activity of the fire burning, they're different. There can be fire, but you know, there's combustion, and therefore the fire is burning. Fire and the activity of burning are different. The external senses of the conditioned soul are material in nature and different from the spiritual form of the soul itself. In this way, it is said, the conditioned soul, quote, has senses, but where we're going is Krishna doesn't have senses in the same way that we have senses. Which is equivalent to saying, has external material senses different from himself. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never has external material senses attached to his original spiritual form. His spiritual senses are an integral part of his spiritual form and therefore are not different from himself. It's something like Krishna and Krishna's name. Not like Krishna has a name. Krishna is his name. The name of Krishna is Krishna and Krishna is his name. Similar. Krishna has a form, well, Krishna is his form. The form is Krishna. It's improper to make a distinction like that, that Krishna has senses. His senses are integral to him. In fact, his spiritual senses are an integral part of his spiritual form and are therefore not different from himself. In this verse, the word swarat is used to mean self-manifest. This word is used to describe the Supreme Lord's senses, which are a self-manifest part of his spiritual form, and not an external imposition, as they are for the conditioned souls. In this way, it should be understood that the personality of Godhead does not, quote, have senses in the same way the conditioned soul does. The conditioned soul is encased in a material body and attached to a set of material senses. The Lord, however, although present within the conditioned soul's heart as the super soul, is free from the encumbrance of a set of external material senses. In this way, the Lord does not have senses. There's like five different ways of emphasizing the same point. But then there's the application. Like when Krishna does pastimes, when he uses one sense interchangeable with another sense. We'll get there in just a moment. In his purport, Bhakti Siddhanta indicates something that's very important for the upcoming verses also, and that is, okay, the living entity is limited and unwholesome. Now how do we overcome that limitedness and unwholesomeness? And all of our other, we know it better than others, you know, our limitedness, or actually some people know better than us what our limitedness is, what our limitations are. Here's Bhaktisiddhanta's statement. It's overcome by ta-da, Nadini Shakti. Well, who's that? Radharani. We get the mercy of Radharani in our limitedness and our unwholesomeness and all of the other jiva-related conditioned soul stuff. We go beyond it. Here's how he writes. The jiva soul attains the nearest approach to the absolute identity, that's Krishna, only when the spiritual force of ecstatic energy appears in him by the grace of Krishna. When we get Krishna's mercy, and Krishna's mercy is Srimati Radharani, and that mercy comes through so many manifestations. You recognize this slide, right? Jiva Goswami, we're going to do our practice, and then we're going to do our performance. The practice of mantra upasana with this verse, because Jiva Goswami says in his commentary that this is a mantra upasana type of verse. So you remember from this morning what that is. So we're going to please take off your university, you know, college academic hat and put on your bhakti hat and see and hear the message, not just like trying to understand and gather some information, put it in your information basket so you can get an A on your exam at the end of the class. Take that hat off. And the devotional mode of hearing, and as sound vibration can liberate from the material conception and invite the spiritual conception, let us do it that way, the bhakti approach. So now we're going to go to the details of the verse. And it starts with this, Anga niyasya satalendriya vritti manti. So the meaning we're going to meditate on as we chant at the end again together. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs. Now we're going to meditate on some pastimes where Krishna exhibits this quality. Prabhupada regularly would refer to the specific pastime, so following Prabhupada will do that too. In the Leela where Krishna had left Vrindavan, taken on the chariot of Akrura to Mathura, when entering into Mathura, Krishna approached a washerman who happened to be in the service of the king, and the bundle of clothes he was carrying was the king's clothes. Krishna very politely, just 12-year-old boy, very politely approached the washerman, said, "My dear washerman, it'll be very pious of you, and you'll receive great pious credit if you do. Could you please give some of those clothes so I can have the cowherd boys come with me into Mathura dressed properly? Because you don't wear village clothes in the big city. You wear city clothes in the big city. So it would be very kind of you." And washerman was very arrogant and let Krishna have it. "You better watch out. These clothes are the clothes of the king. Why, if Kamsa found out that you even had the thought, the audacity of asking for some of his clothes, you're finished. So be gone with you now and your little friends. I'll let you go, but you better not make this mistake again." But Krishna didn't like that the washerman was insulting his friends. And so as you see in the picture on the left, Krishna, just with the tips of his fingers, touched the neck of the washerman. The talking part of his body was separated from the rest of his body. And it wasn't a judo chop. It wasn't, you know, martial arts. He just touched his head. And then Krishna went over to the pile of clothing and opened up the pile and matched up the clothing with different of the cowherd boys. "This would look good on you, Balaram. This would be good on you." And then they decorated Krishna. And so his Prabhupada's words were, his hand acted like a knife. But that same hand, a little bit later, Krishna used the same hand to bring happiness to Kubja. Kubja was also in the king's service. And her service was she took care of aromatics. You know, sandalwood paste and camphor and scented oils she was carrying to the king. And when she saw Krishna, "You're the best recipient for all these nice things." So she walked right up to him. She abandoned all shyness and just anointed Krishna with sandalwood pulps and scented oils and in service to Krishna. Now, she was a hunchback. Her name was Kubja, but another name was Trivikra, meaning she was bent in three places. And she wasn't very attractive, as you can see. So Krishna was very pleased with her devotion. In this case, Krishna didn't even ask. She just stepped forward. So Krishna would put his toes on her toes and the same fingertips under her chin and lifted. Whoop. And her bent body became straight. And her features became very beautiful. And she stood there looking at Krishna, very attractive to his Ujjvala Vigrahasya. Krishna said, "We'll meet later." And he went on. So his limbs can act in any way he wishes them to act. Here's some other pastimes of Krishna, where he swallowed a forest fire. In fact, he did it twice. You know, try to blow out a candle. Sometimes you can't blow out a candle. What to speak of inhale the flame of the candle? What to speak of a whole forest fire? Impossible. Prabhu Krishna, no problem. And the other painting is Krishna, when you see a little small baby, there was a vendor of fruits, and she had a basket of fruits outside of where Krishna was staying. So a little toddler, he toddled out with some grains of rice in his fingers to give her some grains of rice in exchange for some fruits. But as he was moving, his little fingers moved and all the rice fell through his fingers. But she was so attracted to his beauty, although he had nothing in his hand now, she filled his hands with all the fruits that she had in the basket. And Krishna smiled. And just by looking at the basket, it filled up with jewels. With any one of Krishna's limbs, he can do anything else. In Lord Ramachandra's Leela, of course it depends on the version of Ramayana that you read, but when Krishna glanced at the ocean, just by his glancing at the ocean, the whole ocean began to boil. His eyes became copper-colored red. And he was angry. Samudra, he should come. And he had been meditating and fasting for 3 days, and Samudra didn't budge. So just by his glancing, he can make water boil. Imagine, ladies, if you have that capacity, you just walk into the kitchen, glance at the pot, it starts to boil. And that's a pot. You know, what to speak of a pond or a lake? What to speak of an ocean? How much energy you have to apply? It was boiling, all the aquatics were burning. The eyes of the Supreme Lord are amazing. You heard about that in the earlier verse, text 30. Just by his glancing, this is the description in the first canto of Krishna's entering Dwarka. And as he was entering Dwarka, the ladies of Dwarka, being shy, they were standing on the rooftops. But Krishna knew their heart. And so he glanced upon them. And by his glance upon them, his glance entered their eyes and then into their heart. And Krishna entered their heart through his glance, and they felt as satisfied as had they been able to embrace Krishna. They felt that same satisfaction just by the power of Krishna's glance. And we certainly know something from the earlier portion of Brahma Samhita, the glance of Mahavishnu. Some of you were not with us for the part one of Brahma Samhita, but in the process of creation, the Supreme Lord, Mahavishnu, just simply glances over the material energy, the pradhan, and creation starts. The original impregnation, just by glancing. It's a good thing men of our present condition cannot impregnate simply by glancing. You have a big problem. Big problem. But we don't have that capacity. But Krishna has that capacity just by glancing. One of his limbs can accomplish all the things all of the other limbs. Just like under deity worship, Krishna can eat just by hearing, or just by glancing. Or, if you're Raghunandana, he'll eat your offerings. Here's Prabhupada's teachings from, as you see, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he writes, he's explaining this principle of Angani Yastra Sekalendriya Vritti Manti in this way. The tree of devotional service is not of this material world. It grows in the spiritual world, where there is no distinction between one part of the body and another. It is something like a tree of sugar. For whatever part of such a tree one tastes, it is always sweet. The tree of bhakti has varieties of branches, leaves, and fruits. but they are meant for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, next line. Angariyasya sakalendriya vrittimanti usenmai. Lord Krishna simultaneously enjoys pastime with his devotees in the spiritual world and maintains the material world just by his wishing. He eternally sees and maintains. Again, remember the mantra upasana exercise we're going to be doing. Pashanti Panti. There he's. This is the seeing the material world and its different parts. And here's Krishna with Radharani seeing the spiritual world. The spiritual world exists for the pleasure of Krishna. It's the manifestation of the Lord's own potency, and just by his seeing with Radharani, the whole of the spiritual world is there. And if he wants something to move, it moves. He doesn't even have to say, could you move? He just desires. It's amazing. Kalyanti Chiram Jaganti. He manifests innumerable universes. This is Mahavishnu expanding universes from the pores of his body. Similarly, another painting. Mahavishnu, because each of those bubbles represents a universe that's expanding from his transcendental body. He has a big body. Imagine how big his body is. From his body, so many universes come. He's really big. At the same time, is a painting of Mother Yashoda looking within the body of Krishna. And she sees within the body of Krishna all those universes and everything. That's Krishna. His form is full of bliss, truth, and substantiality. That's his form. And is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Ujvala Vigrahasya. Govinda Madhikrusha Tamaham Rajami. So we're almost done. Now we're going to recite the verse. If you have your book or you know the verse, we'll say it together slowly in a meditative way, mantra upasana way. Think of the meaning of the sound as you're saying the words and meditate on this is the nature of Krishna's form.
Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti akshanti pati kalyanti chiram jaganti Ananda Chinmaya Satpujala Vigrahasya Govinda Mani Purusham Tamaham Rajami.
Govinda Adi Purusham Tamaham Rajami. Hare Krishna. So any questions or discussion?
Thank you so much. You mentioned that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, every word that he says, he means very specific meaning.
Yeah.
And I noticed twice in your slides, but is not mentioned eternal, rather it is considered substantial. Rather than the word used for substantial instead of eternity. I was wondering exactly what that meant, substantial.
Sure, thank you. If you read very carefully, I'm sure you have done so, in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada makes the distinction between substance and category. Substantive or substance and category. So, category is this material world and substance is the spiritual world. Although materialists say the other way around. They say, you know, this is substantial. Look at this building. Look at this chair. Okay, we take chair. This is Plato's thing. So here's a chair. I'm sitting in a chair. And after some time, maybe quite some time, there's not going to be a chair. So what is it? It's a category. What substance is earth, water, fire, air, and ether? And the category is chair. And then after it's, you know, before it was earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then it's going to be earth, water, fire, and ether. Category. Then there's substance. In the spiritual world, Plato says, there's chairs. And where did the notion of a chair come from? Before there was a chair, there's a notion, a conception of. And then the carpenter or the manufacturer makes a chair according to that conception. So where did the conception come from? He reasons, he argues, that there's a realm where there's chairs. Absolute realm. That substance. It's like eternally chair. Substance. Substantive. Sat. Eternal. And here's the category. Now you see it, now you don't. Whatever it is you can think of or experience of this world, now you see it, now you don't. Like a magic trick. Nothing in my hat, look, nothing in the hat, pull it inside and outside, nothing in the hat, reach inside, here's a rabbit. Put the rabbit back in the hat, there's no rabbit anymore. Like that. Like a magic trick. Yes.
In this verse that talks about Angani Yastasaklini, the comparison is made between Krishna's fully spiritual form and the form of a conditioned soul.
Yes.
The body is.
Exactly.
When does the soul proper, let's say a living entity, have similar capacity?
Does the soul proper have
similar capacity?
Yes. There's spiritual senses, spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence,
and
spiritual form.
And are they interchangeable?
Yeah. Yes. Let's go back to the statement of Bhaktisiddhanta. The limitedness of the living entity, the closest it can approach to the unlimited capacity or the absolute position is through the contact with Ladini Shakti. So the answer is yes. Immersed in Madhini Shakti, yes. Spiritual form is manifest. Where they're interchangeable. I mean, Narada Muni can travel playing a veena. Radharani can make Radhakund using bangles. And so forth.
Question online, Maharaj. It's from Sundarananda Prabhu. Dear Guru Maharaj, thank you for sharing wonderful descriptions of the spiritual world last night.
Skip the preamble.
Could you please guide me on how to develop attraction for the spiritual world?
Yeah, we're doing it. Katha. Krishna Katha. Stimulates from the morning discussion. It's stimulation for ecstatic love, for buddhipa. Yes.
Thank you so much. what exactly are those? Are those the ones being mentioned in this verse as each and every limb of Lord Krishna and these other functions? Or could you please explain?
Let me read the sentence because I'm not understanding your question. Krishna remains the object of universal homage by reason of his possession of certain unique attributes. That's the, you know, 4 out of the 64. He's unique. Yes? These fourfold unrivaled attributes do not manifest themselves in Narayana, the Lord of Vaikuntha, or in the primeval Purusha avatars, or in the highest deities such as Shiva, not to speak of the Jivas. So, of the 64 qualities, the final 4 qualities are uniquely Krishna's. Now, what's your question?
I was trying to understand what exactly those are.
What exactly? Those 4 that I listed at the very beginning.
So those will not be present in, for example, the form of Lord Rama and other forms?
Yes. The uniqueness of the attractiveness of Krishna's pastimes, the playing of Krishna's flute, and you know, the other, they're not found in Lord Rama or the other personalities within the Vaikuntha realm. Lord Rama's abode, Ayodhya, is in the upper region of the Vaikuntha realm. It's still in Harigam and distinct as Golokadam. And the answer to your question is yes, you're correct. That is what's being said.
Thank you.
Yes. Up front here. Raise your hand.
Thank you so much. I was having a thought. I have an understanding that Krishna's pastimes are manifest in over and over again in different universes repeatedly.
Yes.
So when you illustrated and explained the pastime of the washerman, I was wondering if these kind of pastimes also take place.
Yes.
Is their choice for
us? Yes. Or is it? It says Bhomaliva. His earthly pastimes.
Yes.
Okay. So the answer to that question is yes.
So something like that would also happen in
yes. The way the Prabhupada explains is there's variation on the theme, but the theme is always there. Meaning it may not happen exactly like that. Something like that. You like an example?
I think I understand the variation part. I was trying to understand whether there's a distinction between material world, pastime, and spiritual world.
Yes, that's in part one. But you'll hear more in text 37. One answer is yes, and another answer is no. It appears that there's differences. That's the yes. And the no is, in the unmanifest pastimes, for example, there's no demons. In Goloka, no demons. But there's the bhava that there's demons. There's no birth pastime in Goloka. But there's the bhava, the emotion. Krishna's our son. And then it goes, you know, the unmarried pastimes between, this is like where it gets, you know, slippery slope. The unmarried pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. In the spiritual world, there's no marriages. But there's the mood, the bhava of marriage. Here, there's the lila of marriage. But factually, there's no marriage. We'll get there. Text 37. So, in one sense, there's no difference between the unmanifest, that's the language that Bhakti Siddhanta uses, the avyakta lila, Goloka Vrindavan, we'll have to wait till we get there. Like this freshman that Washu said, we'll have to wait till we get there. But then I was thankful we can get messages from those that are there, what it's like. Through sound. So in those unmanifest pastimes, there's two categories unmanifest. When in Goloka where eternally they're not accessible to us unless you're in this Swarasiki stage of consciousness. Or the ones that are being presently manifest in Vrindavan, but when we go into Vrindavan we don't see them because we're not qualified to see them. But now back to, if I answered your question, there's no difference. There's no washerman. In fact, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan in Goloka Vrindavan. But there's the mood, the bhava, that Krishna leaves Vrindavan. And then the feelings of separation that go along with that. But Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Here there's a pastime. But the Krishna never leaves Vrindavan here either. It's just a pastime. It appears to be. Well, here's some more. Text 37. Stay tuned.
I have a question.
Okay.
Hare Krishna. So, if the spiritual world is for the pleasure of Krishna,
yes.
What's Krishna's purpose to create this mundane world?
Very good question. We discussed that at length in part one, so you can go back and hear the recordings and so forth, but I'll give a short answer. There's two reasons. I'll share this with you. There's a Chinese woman in Chicago. Her name is Ha. And when I met her the first time was at a festival, Rath Yatra festival. And she said, I just have one question. She said, why creation? That was my first meeting with this nice lady. So, two reasons. The personality of Godhead has love. He is made of love. And as he is made of love, the parts and parcel living entities from him are also made of love. Because they're part of him. So with love comes the option of yes or no. If there's no option, yes or no, there's no love. It's love me or else, and there's no or else. Okay, I love you. That's not love. There's the option of no. So living entities, parts of Krishna, have that option. And some have misused that option. And therefore their real happiness, they're without it. And Krishna is a personality of love. And he wishes them to have that happiness. So the material world has that higher purpose to bring us again to the condition of love. There's another part, and that is, they wish, I want happiness without you. So the material world is created for that purpose, to allow us the misuse of free will option. Only built into that option is the message that says, there's no happiness here. It's a mistake. But you know, when people are stubborn, I'm going to figure out happiness somehow. And there's a lot of people trying to figure out happiness somehow. Although it's not a place of happiness. By design. So, then comes the question, why would God design something that's a place of suffering when he loves the living entities, he doesn't want them to suffer? That's the seeming paradox or puzzle. He doesn't like it. But the living entities want their independent happiness. And he wants to correct that mistaken mentality. So we create the material world as an option, at least the possibility of correcting that mistaken mentality. And use our free will properly and re-enter the kingdom of love. Over our fullness of happiness is there. So that's one reason of two. And the second reason is the Supreme Lord has his own spiritual potency, and there's a reflection of his spiritual potency. He's complete, so he has his potency and the reflection of his potency. And that reflection of his potency, she also wants in service. So he, at a distance, he sees that reflection of his internal potency, and she is sad. She wants some service. He's compassionate. He wants to give her some service. So he gives her some service. So it's a compassion of two types. Compassion towards the living entities, so they can come to their fullness of consciousness. And compassion to the reflection of his internal potency, so she can have some service. And she can, on the one hand, this is also very nice, she on the one hand can keep us so busy in pursuit of material happiness that we just don't have time for spiritual happiness. No time. And people will say, you ask them, I don't have time, I've got so many things I've got to do. But at different stages of life, we always have so many things to do. You know, like children, let's play. You gotta play. And at school, it's, I gotta study. And work, I gotta work. And then family, gotta take care of my family. And there's always too much to do. So she engages living entities in that way. But then, that same energy, good news, same energy when she sees we're sincere, that we want to enter into that kingdom of love. We want to be with Krishna once again. We really want to be with Krishna, not just like, these people are crazy here, I want out of this crazy place, but we want to be with Krishna. Not by negation, but by positively restore love in our eternal relation with Krishna. The very same energy works to facilitate our going to Krishna. That's the second purpose of creation. Although it's limited and temporary, by contact with the spiritual potency, it can serve to liberate us. The very place. So the variable is our consciousness. And if our consciousness is oriented sincerely towards, I want to restore this loving relationship, Krishna makes arrangements within the material energy to come back to him. And he gives everything. He gives us the intelligence. He gives us the map. Just like that, you know, that lady on the GPS, turn left. 150 feet, turn left. You know, wait a minute, you turned right. Are you calculating? Do a U-turn, go back and turn left instead of right. She keeps us on track. Super soul, the Lord in the heart, keeps us on track even if we start to get off track. And then, you know, the association of sincere souls that help us get on track and stay on track. He sends so many resources. And the material energy facilitates because she loves him. She wants to serve him. That's one. Yes.
Maharaj, you may have covered this earlier in one of your earlier classes, but you know, you're talking about, you know, when we are from a spiritual kingdom, that's our constitutional position, that's where we are from.
Yeah.
But then how would we even entertain the possibility to enjoy independent of Krishna to begin with?
You know what? There's no good reason. It's quite unreasonable. Search for a good reason, you won't find one. It's the, in Sanskrit, it's yadrichchaya, which our acharyas translated somehow or other. Misuse of free will. You know, one can do the logical argument, say, well, this makes sense to misuse free will, because look at the bad deal. And not only look at the bad deal, but you know, one is in a situation with complete happiness, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Why would one even entertain the idea of something else? Use your logic and reason, and you come out with, no. And here we are. So we misuse free will. It defies logic and reason. That is the reciprocation of the Supreme Lord with our misuse of free will. Here we are. So the main advice of our acharyas is, in this particular situation, rather than pondering unlimitedly over why, which defies reason, best is take the means to get out. And Prabhupada writes in his Bhagavad Gita purport to chapter 13, text something like 26, when we're out, then we'll understand why and how it happened. But we can hear it now and say it's misuse of free will. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. So, you like kind of phrased the question in my mind, but for a non-believer, like you made a statement earlier in the beginning of the class, that take off your academics hat and put on your bhakti hat.
Yeah.
Like that. So, to me, it sounds very clear that unless and until we don't have a nishtha or shraddha or, you know, that ascending faith level,
yes,
we can't really understand this. It just becomes some sort of a fairy tale.
That's right.
So, wouldn't this be tough for us to explain this kind of a knowledge to the outsiders?
Well, imagine the challenge that Prabhupada had to explain to the Western audience. And, you know, the solution to the challenge is bhakti. You know, haladini shakti. The potency. It's not our potency, you know, our ability to arm wrestle with somebody across the table and pin them. That's not what works. Because it goes back up again. Yeah, but so it's the influence of the internal potency. It's not our doing, it's the internal potency. And we become an instrument of the internal potency. Similar to what we're doing right now. If say, you know, if any one of us had complete faith, we'd be in transcendental ecstasy and love of God at every single moment. We're not there because of that reason. So what to do? You know, we're doing what we're doing. We're hearing Lord Brahma's revelation of the spiritual reality. And you know, we'll find those that stay with this process through the course of this seminar. Just like the potency will carry us to another realm. We'll have the tools, but it's not just the tools. It's that spiritual potency, that sound vibration will carry us. We're exercising our intellect, but it's not by intellect. That's one of the verses we're going to hear out of these four. In fact, I think it's this evening. It's not an intellectual exercise we're doing together. It's a spiritual exercise. We're using our intellect. We're discriminating. Intellect is the faculty of discrimination. We see the difference between this and that. That's what material intelligence does. You know, it's like technology. How many of you have either engineering or IT degrees? You know, most of you. Maybe some other degrees, but it's, you know, this technology is distinguishing this from that. That's all. You know, the push and pull, the cause and the effect. And you wiggle something over here, and something wiggles over here. That's technology. You figure out how to do it, you put it together, make a product, and earn a living. Called technology, or engineering. Cause and effect on the material side. You have to have material intelligence to know how to wiggle something here to get something over there to wiggle. Or when you don't want something over there to wiggle, what do you do instead? Technology. And then there's spiritual technology. And so the faculty of discrimination is needed, but it's not by the faculty of discrimination that you can understand spiritual reality. We're going to hear it tonight. Even with the Vedas, supposing somebody doesn't, you know, do the modern education program, they just study the Vedas program. Still they're not going to understand Krishna by that faculty of knowing the Vedas. We'll hear about it tonight. It's not just, it's not an intellectual, it's not by jnana alone. In fact, when we're using, making distinctions between this and that, it's bhakti. Why? Because the influence of the Vadini Shakti is there. What's that? How to connect again with Krishna. That's in the beginning, in the middle, and the end of the whole time together. And as bhakti and bhakti and bhakti come into your consciousness, and then the reality of Krishna becomes known. And the material conceptions subside. And the faith in understanding Krishna by the power of my academic skill. I have a big IQ. I can figure out anything. Watch me, here I go. Zoom, zoom. I've got that. Look, I can get, I've got this credential and that grade and this, da 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 da. If that was the case, then we'd have PhDs with no Krishna, but we don't have that result. It's not by academic skill. We can use whatever discriminating capacity we have, powered by and directed by and lifted by bhakti. And then, you know, somebody can do some service this way, and somebody can do some service that way. But even a very simple person can understand Krishna. We're going to hear some more about that tonight.
Maharaj, one more, this is just a comment on a question on a theme. In India, they do this Chandi Path, the worship of Durga. It goes on for hours and hours, sometimes days.
Sure, sure.
And I was part of one of them in Seattle, somebody invited me to be. The whole day from morning to evening, all I could understand is Klim. And every third mantra or fourth or every other in some cases, they would start with Klim. So I looked it up, and it meant some that supreme truth. So what you explain in the morning, that it's Radha and Krishna, that makes sense.
Well, that, you know, that's our Vaishnava understanding. Supposing you're not a Vaishnava understanding. You know, hearing what I just said, they go, no. And we'll go, yes. You know, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yayatamam prapanyante. So one reads this and the other reads that, and they're looking at the same thing. So it's the consciousness behind the activity, not just the activity of the study of the Vedas. And then, you know, reality with a capital R becomes disclosed. Truth with a capital T becomes known. And not otherwise. You'll get something else. The fulfillment of some other desire. And that's part of the purpose of creation. People have different desires. Pious and impious. Yes? Yeah.
Yeah, in Sanskrit, complete and lingual form, that is to say, in the conception of ideas, for you to understand the etymology and compounds and grammars and constructs of Sanskrit, deriving each and every meaning onto your own conception, onto your realization, does it have any more, let's say, potency than its direct transliteration to English or any other tongue in the world?
Yes and no. The no part is just like, you know, the translation of Brahma Samhita in English. There's potency in equal potency. This is the, you know, no, there's no difference between the translation in English and the sound in Sanskrit. Provided, you know, that. Can you move so we have eye contact? Thanks. Provided that the translator is qualified, spiritually qualified. And then, on the other hand, there's something special about the same meaning in Sanskrit, in the sense that, let's say, Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita, there's Krishna's direct words. Now there's the translation of Krishna's direct words, and there's Krishna's direct words. So translation is not different, but Krishna's direct words are special. There's a potency with that sound vibration. Take another example. We could take the Maha Mantra and just repeat the English meaning of the Maha Mantra. And the potency is there because of the translation of the Maha Mantra. O all attractive supreme, and Hare Krishna. Okay? Difference and non-difference. Yes.
So the follow-up question on that one. So since there is the same potency, if somebody instead of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, just that they chant the translation of the mantra continuously, will it have the same potency? No.
I already said yes and no. We're given the process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Sanskrit. So we just follow that. And this kind of question is an academic one. Because we're not going to do it anyways. We're just going to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in Sanskrit. It's the sound of Krishna's name. So why not address him according to his name? That's what we want to say in English instead of his name. Say his name. Personal. It's the personal process. Relationship. Personal relationship process. Mahatma.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is on understanding Govinda's form or abode or leelas are neither imaginative means we cannot imagine and
I can hear you.
Okay. So I want to understand the word unwholesomeness in this regard.
It was explained by Jiva Goswami in Bhaktisiddhanta, but I'll do it again, no problem.
With an example, I'm a weaker.
Sure. Pain. We know pain. We have somebody with their foot's in a club back there because of pain in their foot. And there's no such pain in bodies that are all spiritual. So why not have bodies that are free from pain? Well, it's certainly possible, but not in the realm of unwholesomeness. That's one example. You want some more? Do you get the idea? old age. There are some people in the room who are of old age. And when you have old age, the functions of the body don't work like they used to. You can't digest food like we used to. Hearing starts to go, and you know, this and that and the other thing.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing as old age in the spiritual realm. And then, you know, mistakes. You ever make a mistake in your life once or two times? Okay. In the spiritual world, there's no unwholesomeness like that.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Thank you.
It's especially important to understand the question you're asking when we get to Krishna's relationship with the gopis. Very important. Because people ascribe unwholesomeness when there isn't any. But it starts with understanding the form is all spiritual, and therefore there's no unwholesomeness. Okay? Here we go. I knew we could count on you.
Hare Krishna.
Hi, Krishna.
I have a question regarding praying to Lord Shiva.
Praying to Lord Shiva.
Praying to Lord Shiva. Bhagavatam 12, 13th verse.
Save your Lord Shiva question for the three verses about Lord Shiva.
It says that Lord Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas, and so would do we get the same benefit in praying to Lord Shiva as we do when we pray to Jatayu or Guha or someone like that? The ones who actually serve Lord.
I'll give an answer, but I'd rather you put the question in the parking lot. We'll come back later.
Okay.
But so, a short answer is, in the material world, everything is relative. This is relatively better, that's relatively lesser. Everything is relative, in the material world. In the spiritual world, everything is absolute. Absolute. So, depending upon what's the difference between material and spiritual? Answer. Seeing things in relation to Krishna is spiritual. Seeing things separate from Krishna, that's material. According to the Bhagavatam, seeing things from separate from Krishna is maya. It's illusion. It doesn't even exist. But it appears to exist. And one lives with the conception that it exists, although it doesn't exist. So seeing things separate from Krishna is material. So in the material realm, things are relative. It's saying better, things lesser. So in response to your question, some better, some lesser on the material side. Depends on how one sees those personalities. If one sees those personalities as pure devotees of the Supreme Lord, no problem. There's equal because it's absolute. It's of the absolute nature. Is from Krishna's perspective or Ramchandra's perspective, oh, you've offered your respects to Guha. You're better than one who has offered respects to Lord Shiva.
I just want to know.
Say, level playing field. From the absolute perspective, from the material perspective, depends on the consciousness. From the absolute perspective, it's absolute. You know, become the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. So here's the option A: better that I serve Radharani, or better that I serve the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Radharani. The same. And if one's attitude is humble, then, you know, if your attitude is not humble, well, I'm going to serve Radharani. That's the lesson. Right? Last question.
Just an extension to what you responded to this question. There's a wonder about the difference between absolute and relative. So my understanding was that absolute is something stands on its own, and relative is something solid and always in relation to something.
Correct.
But when we say with regards to Krishna, it's absolute, and material world is something is relative. It's also gets confusing because this word gets used so much. And so I can understand that part, that Krishna stands on his own, no origin, you know, etc. So that way he is absolute.
Yeah.
And here it's relative because we can't stand on it, we always have a cause.
No, it's not just we. It's not just we. It's a question of consciousness. So, those in the material world have a conception of this is good and that's bad. This is hot and that's cold. Duality. And relatively, more hot, more cold. Worse is better. This is bad and that's worse. So, in the material world, everything's relative compared to something else. In the spiritual world, everything is absolute because of the consciousness. Now the washerman to take him, Krishna, you're bad. It's material consciousness. Krishna's not bad. Or text 37, people that look upon Krishna's pastimes as bad. Not the pastimes are bad, the consciousness is bad. The consciousness is, this is good and that's bad. The standard becomes absolute when it's in relation to Krishna. When Gandhari, because I was just studying this, when Gandhari, after the battle of Kurukshetra was over, she was really upset. And understandably so, she had just lost all of her sons. Now she had forgotten why it was that she lost all of her sons, because of all of their sinfulness, they received the reactions of all their sinfulness. They tried multiple times murder. So the wrongdoer, one of the wrongdoers for her eldest son, Duryodhana, was Bhima. She requested, please bring Bhima before me. Because she was blind, or at least, excuse me, blindfolded. She had great austerity, and she was about to release some of the power of a great austerity upon Bhima. And she spoke with him in really strong language. What kind of righteous king and royal family member are you? Look what you did in violating the principles of Dharma and battle. And how could you do such a thing without feeling any uncertainty about what he had done? He said a number of things, but you know, you're a knower of Dharma, and according to the laws of Manu, one who commits murder is to be punished with the death penalty. An attempted murder, similarly, and several times, your son attempted to murder, and he disgraced in a public assembly, Draupadi, trying to strip her naked in a public assembly. Such a person is due to receive terrible reaction. Don't blame the instrument of his karma. Blame yourself, because you didn't do anything to check him. And as far as the specific act, what I did was what Krishna told me to do, and that's the standard of morality. She was silent, because he was right. She was still unhappy and angry. But she could not blame Bhima. Then she went, you know, to Yudhisthira. Then it went to Krishna. Yeah. when Krishna says that's the stand of Dharma. That's the absolute reality. When Krishna's, anyway, you guys say it. Krishna's taking butter. It's absolute. When we take something, even butter, not absolute. Bad. Stealing is bad. Everyone knows stealing is bad. And Krishna takes butter from the storerooms of the elderly gopis. It's a loving dealing. It's his butter. Not stealing. It's pastime. It's glorious. From the absolute perspective. So how to go from the relative or the non-absolute perspective to the absolute perspective? Bhakti Siddhanta's message is the Ladini Shakti. How do we get to Ladini Shakti? By what we're doing right now. And all the other forms of devotional service. That's association with the internal potency, Ladini Shakti. Without Ladini Shakti, there's no devotional service. Service without devotion. We're all serving. Everyone's serving. Someone. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Books? Yes, no. Okay. When I came here,